today, I'm so glad to have a special guest in the house today, my brick brethren. By the way, I'm Jonathan Powell from GospelKeysUrban600.com, and we have a very, very special guest in the house tonight, Mr. Nelson Jackson. He's a musician at West Angeles Church of God in Christ in Los Angeles, California, and he's a well-known musician around L.A. and around the States. He's been traveling across the United States as he's been a musician for the past 20-plus years, and he has a lot of experience and knowledge. And Nelson, are you there on the line?
Yes, sir, I'm here. How you doing?
I'm doing all right, man. Thanks for being on the call today.
Thanks for having me.
All right, no problem. Guys, this is like my big brother. He actually got me started, you know, with a lot of different chord progressions, and he actually helped me to really become the musician I am today, and I really, you know, would like to give him all credit for, like, where I am today, man. He just don't know how he's helped me. And, Nelson, let's get started as far as telling everybody how you got started and just some background information about yourself.
Okay. How did I start? It goes far back. I'm a PK, as a lot of people know, and I kind of developed this thing, passion for music at about the age of maybe 4 or 5. Anytime the musicians at my dad's church would play, I would be compelled to turn around and play on the back of the pews, which, you know, a lot of churches don't have pews anymore, but I would turn around and start playing the back of the pews as if it was a piano until my mom, you know, said, like, oh, God, I guess my son really wants to know how to play piano and learn. So I ended up...
And what age was that?
That's about the age of 5.
Age of 5, okay.
And so by time, it took a while for her to, you know, to catch a hold of that this boy playing on the back of the benches obviously wants to play. So about at the age of 7, the musician at our church had an uncle who had, like, a gospel school who taught you how to play by ear type a bit, and so I started going there at the age of 7. By the time I turned 8 years old, I had already pretty much surpassed the whole class, people that had been there for, like, 5, 6 years. And, you know, from that point, you know, my dad took me out to school, and I started playing for my dad's church at 8 and a half, 9 years old.
Okay, Nelson, did you call on 2 lines, by the way? So some people are hearing an echo. I'm actually hearing an echo, too.
No, just one.
Oh, okay. I'm trying to figure out what this issue is right now. There's an echo every time I talk. Okay, but you can continue. We're going to figure it out as we go.
Okay.
So you're at 8 years old, and you're playing at your dad's church.
Yes, sir.
All right.
Like I said, so from that point, you know, it started off, you know, slow, you know, triads with bass notes for a couple years, and then the more I played, the more people that I met, more churches that my dad's church visited, the more musicians I came in contact with, and from that point it went from the one-hand chord to the two-hand chord to the bass notes with the foot pedals and, you know, to where I'm at now and playing organ and, you know, 2 or 3 auxiliary keyboards at the same time. So it's been a journey.
Okay, so you have no musical teaching. No one actually sat down and taught you anything. How did you actually learn fundamental things? You know, a lot of musicians tend to jump past basics and fundamentals, and, you know, being an ear musician, you tend to not have to do it. But what made you decide to and take it upon yourself to actually get an understanding of what you're playing instead of, you know, just playing by ear?
Actually, the good thing about my situation is I really never got a chance to hear, like, a real musician for a couple years. My dad was, you know, he had a storefront church. So he fellowshiped a lot of churches that had storefront churches, and so they had a lot of piano players, old school people who really didn't know how to play. They just played for the church, probably played in one key. So for about 5 or 6 years, from like the age of 9 till about 14, 15, all I really knew was triads. I honestly, in my mind, never knew that you could play a two-handed chord, which worked in my favor because I got used to playing the basic chords for about 5 years.
Oh, okay.
So when I finally, you know, we ended up venturing out and fellowshiping with other churches, I think the first musician that is very well known right now, actually he's like a big brother to me as well, kind of did the same thing to me that I did with you, Craig Brockman. He was the first person that I really heard playing full chords, and, you know, I went to this church and it was like, wow, this guy's playing, this sounds just like the record, all the chords. And so that's when my ear started to open up. But like I said, by me playing so long, the foundation of music it was easier for me to, like, it took me a year to learn how to play two-handed chords because I was already used to the root, and so I was able to see the root chord with I added to it.
Okay. Now, so what about as far as knowing what key you are in and understanding progressions, when did you start getting more so a knowledge of, you know, how things really work together with the scale, you know, as far as progressions, like from the 1 to the 4 and the 5? Like, when did you start getting a good grasp on that, or did you study any of that, or did it pretty much come natural as you learned more songs? Like, how did that actually come about?
Well, it did. It came about as I learned more songs. Like I said, playing for a storefront church, which I think is one of the best trainings any musician could ever have. Every friend that I have that has any type of great ability, they all came from a church in which had about 30 to 50, 70 maybe members. So, you know, and then, like, we kind of did church a little different, you know, 10, 15 years ago. You had this thing called testimony service, which, honestly, you think about it now, it was ear training service for a musician because you'd have somebody get up and give a testimony, and then somebody would sing a song in some random key, and then you have to catch them. They stop singing the testimony, then somebody else sings a random song in a whole other key, and then you get to the preacher, and he hoops. You know, at the time, my dad was known for, like, changing keys about a good 11 times. So after so long, I got used to the sound and the pitch of those keys, you know. And honestly, the people who would sing their songs, a lot of them would sing their songs actually in the same key every time they sung that same exact song. So when I heard, you know, say a cousin of mine sing a song, she'd always sing in the C sharp. So I always knew when I heard C sharp, D flat, however you want to call it, I always knew that. I knew my dad, I was able to hear E flat to F sharp back down to B all the way back to F sharp. So, you know, that kind of, it was really ear training. I mean, and then me being in church 4 or 5 days out the week, and everything was like that. Like I said, it was just random singing. And so it was pretty much a good way of me developing that ear that I now have.
Okay, now being a musician, and from your standpoint, you know, most songs are written in, like, the flats and the sharps and all that. But, you know, when they jumped into, like, these awkward keys, how did you adjust? Was it a struggle for you? You know, did you have some embarrassing moments where you just didn't know what chords to play? Because, you know, when you learn and you practice, most of the time you're playing in, like, the flats and the sharps. And a lot of people are scared to even play. And, you know, your E's, your A's, your B's. So at what point did you start getting good at playing in those keys? And how did you have to, like, sit down and practice at home? Or was it pretty much the more you struggled, you know, as you know, they start singing in other keys? Or, you know, how did you come about playing in, like, the keys that most musicians don't play in? You know, when you say a singer jumps up and starts just singing in any awkward key, or even if the pastor is preaching in an awkward key, like, how did you develop that skill?
Well, my story is very interesting to me, because, like I said, the musicians that I grew up around, the best musician that played in my dad's church played in about, I'm counting right now, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. He played in 6 keys. And so he told me as long as I could play in C, B-flat, E-flat, F, A-flat, B-flat, I'd be fine. And so those are the keys that I kind of had together. And so when it came to D, E, F-sharp, G, A, B, it was foreign to me. And then on top of the fact that the organ that the organist got at my dad's church that only could play in 5 keys, he had got an organ that had a transpose button on it. So I would find myself cheating every now and then until I'll never forget. I was at this church, Pasadena, a very nice-sized church. Actually, it's a bishop in Pasadena, and they knew that I played. And so one of the ministers who was over the service was on organ. And, you know, he saw me come in. He's like, cool, you know, a musician's in, so let me get off so I can get on the mic. And so, he's playing this, you know, congregational song, little, you know, shout music type of song. And I look at where his hand is while he's getting up, and his hand was in E natural. And I looked at that, and I was stunned. And so at that moment, I can go back and forth from 2 keys, from E minor.
By that time, you was already on the organ, so it wasn't no backing out, huh?
Exactly. And so, again, I had to go back from an E minor chord to an A major chord, back and forth, back and forth. And, I mean, I vowed after that night, I will never allow that to happen to me again. So, you know, I went home, and I came up, like I said, the method that I started to use is I would take the songs that say, like, in D-flat, I would take, like, the songs that really, you know, had moves or whatever, and I would spend a week taking every chord maybe like 2 hours a day, every chord in every song in D flat, and I would transpose it to D.
Uh-huh.
Every day. And so, honestly, it took me a week per key.
How did you go about transposing? Was there some type of system you used, or did you, like, go in half steps, or...
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
What was the process
steps,
of, you know, going from what key? Did you jump from, like, C and then go to F, or how did you do it?
It just pretty much half steps. I would look, because, like I said, I was fluent in, say, like, C sharp already, D flat already, so I would look at my position of my fingers in D flat, and then I would just slide them up a half step to D.
Okay.
And then I would do that through the whole song until I got the whole song in D, and I'd practice that whole song. Because at the end of the day, a lot of people don't know that these chords are chords at the end of the day, and there's not as many as people think. You know, we're scared of them because, you know, we haven't really experienced learning them, but these all these chords that we play are recycled in every key. And when I started actually transposing and going to D, I saw that some of the chords that I played in D were the same chords I played in F.
Yeah.
Or, you know, things like that. And then when I went to F, I saw that, oh, these are some A-flat chords or some D chords.
Exactly.
So you start to find out that they were related.
Uh-huh.
And so it's kind of like, you know, I instead of me just learning it, I would also look at what I'm doing, and I would ask myself, you know, try to make sense of it. Why does this go here? How is this related? And then, again, the more you think, the more you play, the more you start to realize that, you know, like you said, like the 1-4-5 ones, the cadences, the 1-4-1, you start to learn that those are just common music in every song.
Exactly.
And then from that point, it's about an inversion, or it's about you know, flatten the fifth or raising the fifth. But at the end of the day, like 1-4-5-1, in every key is going to be 1-4-5-1. So at the moment you learn your scales in every key, you know if I go to A natural, the 4 is going to be D, 5 is going to be E, and it makes it easier for you to learn how to get around.
Okay. Now, you said you started on the organ. Like, did anyone teach you draw bar settings and all that? Like, how did you actually just get started with your foot? You know, it involves a lot of coordination, and you started at an early age. So how did you start to develop, you know, the rhythm and a different, you know, coordination that's involved? What type of things did you do to actually get good at that?
It took a nice minute for me to get the coordination with my feet.
Traditional songs and shouting music.
Oh,
you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the organist at my dad's church, he, you know, kind of taught me the standard settings when, you know, you might pull out the first four. That's standard. And then from that point, I learned, but the more I got around, I learned a little different tricks. But I pretty much just did the standard. And again, like I was playing triads and bass notes for a while, and then I would try to incorporate my feet. And then, you know, because, you know, we had Sunday morning service, Sunday night service, Tuesday night service, Thursday call rehearsal, Friday
full
service.
Revival every week.
Yeah, revival. So I'm on the organ, you know, all the time. So the more I was on the organ, I learned how to actually, so many years, you know, 5 or 6 years, you're running your foot bass like it's a bass player. You know, I kind of got to the point to where I can actually move and, you know, do tricks with the feet and everything because of experience. It just takes a little time, but once you have it, you have it.
Okay. Now, someone told me, and I'm not particularly an organ player. I can play the organ, but I'm not an organ player. But as far as your foot, they told me one thing you can do is practice with a big boot, and that'll help you or play, you know, if you're at church, like wear a big boot on your left foot, and that'll help to build the strength and everything in your foot and your accuracy too. Would you agree with that or... You know,
I would, because of the boot being as wide as it could be, you know, you have to, you know, just it's pretty much no being on the side of it, really, because you're going to clash on another note. So it's going to make you develop some accuracy, you know, and to the point to where, you know, you start, you know, playing with your shoes off, and then you're moving so fast because, you know, it's like almost like playing basketball with ankle weights. You know, you got this boot on, it's kind of heavy, and you learn how to move quick. And then, you know, like me sometimes, depending on if I'm playing by myself, me and a drummer, yeah, I might take my shoe off if I have a bass player because my foot is strong enough for me to move as fast as I want to move now because I've got that accuracy because of, you know, playing with certain type of shoes on. So whether it's a boot or whatever now, it's pretty much easy. But I agree that that would definitely it'll make you a strong person real fast.
All right, cool. All right, we got a question from Keith Robinson from Toronto, and he says, okay, you started with your left and your right hand playing bass note in your left, chord in your right. How did you develop playing chords with your left hand? He says he struggles to play chords with his left hand. Can you give him any advice on, you know, how you got started recording with your left hand, and then, you know, knowing what exactly to play in your right hand. Can you, like, get into that?
Yes. So what ended up happening to me, like I said, I got used to, which is like if he's playing like that now, it's good for him to really concentrate on even just what he's doing right now with that bass, because that right there is your foundation to the end of the world. So you playing these triads and these bass notes, a lot of times what happens is from this point, my when I stop playing the bass note on my left hand becomes my right hand, and sometimes we'll play that triad, and then my right hand will play either the, a lot of times when a lot of people don't understand, you either double the chord up, or the chord might be, you know what I'm saying? That's when we get into, like, seven chords, the nine and stuff. You know, it's, but you know what I'm saying? And which I tell people a lot of times, it's really good for people to learn, you know, chords, you know, buy chord books and learn your seven chords and learn your nines and learn your 11s and learn your 13s, because that's pretty much all that we're playing. We're playing a 13 flat five and things like that, you know. It's all scale, you know. It's pretty much all scale, and a lot of times people don't know too that your chord, the way you know even your chord is based off your bass note. So when there's a bass note being played, you know, if I'm playing a C and then I play an E flat in my left hand and then I add a B flat in my right hand, you know what I'm saying? That's a C minor. You get into C minor 11s and stuff like that. And so another thing I learned too, as far as with adding, knowing what to play in my little trick, you know, but you just have to learn how to find where to place them, is mm-hmm. a lot of times, say if I'm in E flat, any uh-huh. chord, any you know, okay, then we got an E flat scale, E flat, F, G, A flat, B flat, C, D, E flat. Any note in that scale, there's a 9 out of 10 chance that you can play any chord off that. Like, so if I can play an E flat chord and can play an F chord with that, or I can play a G chord with that because it's in the scale. I can play an A flat chord with that. I can play a B flat chord with that. I can play a C chord. I can play a D chord back to an E flat chord. It's all a big puzzle. I mean, it's a puzzle that you put together.
Now you say you can play any chord. Would it be major, minor, augmented? Like, what particular types of chords would you?
That's why I say it's a 9 out of 10 chance. All the majors work. You know what I'm saying? If I play a major chord, you know what I'm saying?
Uh-huh.
Major F with a major E flat, that's a chord, but you just would have to know where to play it. I can play an E flat chord with a G major because it's in the scale.
Uh-huh.
It's just little tricks that I looked and I learned. And sometimes you go to the piano, and I just, at one time I did that, I just started playing, okay, these are the scales. I started playing all these chords, you know, the majors of the notes that's in the scale, and they worked. Sometimes they might sound a little weird. Then you might go back and hear somebody play that same chord, but like, oh, okay, it was just a matter of learning where to place it.
Okay.
But a lot of times you can use the minors, you can use the augmented. It just all depends. But a lot of times that's usually what's going to happen. And even with your bass notes, if you play a chord, a B flat chord with an E flat bass, which, you know what I'm saying, would be an E flat major 7. Uh-huh. A lot of people don't know, like, your bass notes can be, you know, you could actually, because you're playing an E-flat chord, you can play, let's just say, like an E-flat major. So I got the B-flat in my right hand. I can play an E-flat bass. I can also play a G bass. I can also play a B-flat bass. I can play a D with that B-flat chord, which is a chord in my left hand. Like, I just played an E-flat major 7. So it's E-flat, G, B-flat, you know what I'm saying? So it's little tricks like that, you know, that how you learn how to switch bass notes, which is another thing that makes your that changes your chord and gives it that twist.
Oh, okay.
Okay. I don't know if that was too much information.
No, perfectly fine. This is stuff that a lot of people need to hear that, you know, they don't know. They don't get a chance to talk to professional musicians and, you know, get inside their head as far as what to do and, you know, their little secrets and everything. But we have another question. It says, okay, you said you pretty much turn your left hand into your right hand, okay? Now, once you turn your left hand into your right hand, how do you know what chord to play in your right hand? You know, you said you can double up, but, you know, there's different chords to play in your right hand. Like, how do you know exactly what to play in your right hand?
It's all about, you know, the song. And at this point, your right hand now is going with the song. A lot of times it's going with the melody.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? From that, you know, and it's a matter of what the song is saying. You know, sometimes the first chord might be just a major. Sometimes the chord might be a major 7. So say if I'm playing like an E flat and I'm playing it with the I'm playing it just, you know, with the bass note and with the chord, or I can play the B flat with the 7. Now if I change that and, you know, somebody's playing the bass, I'm going to end up going and taking, like I said, taking that E-flat chord that was in my right hand, I'll move it to my left, and then I can either play either E-flat in both hands,
yeah,
or I can play that B-flat chord with that E-flat chord. You know what I'm saying? So it's a matter of what's being sung. You know, if the top note is that B-flat, then 9 times out of 10 is going to be that major 7 chord.
Okay. Okay, I see. Are there any tricks or shortcuts that you can give as far as quickly finding? You know, it's easy to hear the melody, but as far as filling in the rest of the chord, you know, you can hear that top note, but as far as finding the actual chord, you know, what type of advice would you give? Or how did you actually start, like, knowing, you know, once you go to a certain chord in your left hand, you play this chord in your right, when you hear this melody or this chord, you know, that type of thing?
Me, like I said, besides, like, you know, we can't get around it. I think, you know, me and you went through this, you know, why, you know, I don't know if a lot of people know even, you know, Jonathan Powell's story. I mean, he, you know, Jonathan Powell went from a bass note chord playing person into a year playing two humongous chords. And that's because you didn't get around practicing and being around. Like, the two main things, besides you sitting down, I mean, besides, you know, all the other stuff, is you got to practice and you got to surround yourself with musicians that are where you want to be. You got to record them and you got to practice verbatim what they just play a lot of times. And so a lot of times they will open your ear. On top of me doing that same process that you did, I went through a process where, and I still do, I learn a lot of my songs through the bass note because, again, the bass note is where the chord starts.
Exactly.
You know what I'm saying? So if the bass player is playing E-flat, and I play a B-flat chord in my, you know, say, in my left hand, and I just double up, you're not going to call that a B-flat major count, that bass note. That bass note is an E-flat, so it's going to be an E-flat something. And so a lot of times, you know, I find myself doing, I'm learning, and I'm listening to the bass note, because once I get that bass note, it determines where your chord is. And for me doing that again, it's like now I'm not only listening to the bass note, but I'm listening to the top note. And so that helps me get even the more, helps me get the chords even more precise. The stuff in between, like I said, that's just practicing. You have to know your chords. You got to get a chord book, and you have to know your chords. And again, like I said, there's a major seven, there's a minor seven, there's a diminished seven, augmented. Those are all the chords, literally. Like, you know, and it's just a matter of how you, the inversion. And what's going to tell you that inversion is that top note. So you'll know if it's going to be first inversion, second inversion. And then when you got that bass note, then it's like, oh, okay. You know what I'm saying? It's like I'm playing this chord, but it doesn't sound like the record. That's because you're not playing with the melody. You're not playing the top note along with the right bass note. But
exactly.
At the end of the day, the chord is going to be one of those chords. It's about four or five of them. And it's just a matter of how you invert them and really get used to, you know, playing them and placing them. Which,
yeah,
to me, like I said,
thing,
takes a lot of practice.
Yeah, and another thing about learning those bass notes, you actually get to see the pattern of how the song is moving too as well. And
exactly.
What the thing that a lot of people actually do wrong, they go and try to pick out the chord first.
Yeah.
You can be all day, you know, trying to pick out a chord if you don't even know the foundation of the chord progression too as well. And what a lot of people fail to realize is a lot of musicians, they don't hear songs chord from chord. You actually hear progressions.
Exactly.
And that's how you recognize a lot of music, you know. And the more and more you practice, the more you'll be able to realize it. And what makes these particular styles different are the types of chords that you use off the, you know, certain chord progressions. You can take a 1-4-5 and play all dominant seventh chords, and
exactly,
you have more traditional style. Or you can play major seven chords. Now you have a worship style, so just learning the bass notes and will actually help you to understand the foundation of the chord progressions too, you know, as well. Now,
totally agree.
Nelson, who have you played for? Who are you playing for right now? Some people want to know.
Right now, I don't do too much of the traveling thing anymore. I am more so, you know, I don't know if anybody understands, West Angeles is a job in itself. I mean, we're playing for the presiding bishop of the Church of God in Christ, which is a big deal. I'm you know, every day I wake up, I'm, like, honored that I'm there. And, you know, it's not an easy gig to have. And, I mean, I don't care. It's been a lot of people come through there. Some of the people, you know, names that we all know that are, like, great but could not, you know, fit in that vein. So it's a big deal to be there and to fit in and to be able to gel the way we do. I mean, so many people come down to our rehearsals and, you know, from different places and just really, like, admire how we, you know, the daily we sound like a record. So that's my inspiration, and, you know, and the fact that it keeps me at home. I'm kind of doing the production thing right now, so West Angeles is pretty much my foundation. And, you know, we play for pretty much every artist that comes through the church, but I did a lot of the traveling, like, you know, I'm 29 now, so I did a lot of my traveling, like, early 20s, playing for different artists and things like that, secular, gospel. I've done jazz artists as well, and like I said, now I'm just focusing on my own artists, but at the same time, you know, playing at West Angeles. Like,
okay, now you said we. Who do you actually play with?
Right now?
In your band, I mean, a lot of guys people don't know, like, are like names that, you know, that you see on a lot of records too as well. Just to give people an idea, you say we, you know, just to broaden the horizon.
Well, Mike Burrell, which is like a big brother to me, another person who took me in and took my understanding and took it to a whole nother level. And we play, I don't know if, you know, people ever see, you know, us on West Day on the web, but you hear us and we gel so well. Been playing with Mike for about 7 years now. We do records together. We do a lot of sessions together. We do a lot of work together. So it's me and Mike. We're actually the only two board players at the church. You know, we have two bass players, which is Jimmy Newble. He's been at the church for 26 years, so he's a major foundation. His brother Mike Newble plays drums. They've both been there 26 years. We have Freddie Fluellen, been there 22 years. Dana Hammond on drum, who's been there 10 years. So they switch out, but pretty much every Sunday and every time we have a full band, it's always Nelson and it's always Mike Burrell.
Okay. Now you said you guys gel so well. And you guys sound like the record. How do you develop that type of gel? Like, what are some key things? You know, you got a lot of young musicians that tend to think, you know, playing in a band or, you know, playing piano or whatever instrument that might be is really about showing all your chops. You know, what tends to happen, me coming up, it was a blessing for me to be around older cats because I really didn't take on that mentality, you know, because I got to see, you know, older people and more seasoned musicians as I came up and grew. So that really helped me to develop more so into a musician as well. But what advice would you give, to, you know, to some of the younger cats, or even not even younger cats? You know, you have people of all ages that are, you know, starting to play the piano or just different instruments. What would be some advice as far as playing in a band situation, and how can you develop the skill and more so the discipline of knowing when to do what and how not to run when someone else is running it? You know, just more so the gel and the vibe of it.
I guess it's pretty much, I can always use your story and watching how you came up, like, again, what you did, what I did, what the Mike Burrell, what he's done, and, you know, a lot of the friends I grew up around, we would learn the song, and we would learn the song verbatim. I mean, you know, if it took us, again, sometimes it might take you a week to learn that song back and forth, but that week is going to turn into 5 days. 5 days are going to turn into three. Three is going to turn into one. To the point to where, like, now, you know, I shouldn't be saying this, but, you know, it does come to a point to where you can actually, I can drive in the car, never listen to my CD, which I should be before I go, but just say I don't get a chance to, I can listen to my CD on the way to rehearsal, and I'll know my song without playing a piano.
And I will never forget, guys, I'll roll with this guy going to a concert. He does a concert in Santa Barbara for the school. What's the name of the school?
University
of Santa Barbara College. And I asked this guy, like, did you learn these songs? He's like, no, I'm learning them right now. I'm like, huh? And it's like 10 songs, like, and he's just listening to them. And I went to the gig, and he never really messed up, you know. And it was just, like, mind-blowing for me to actually see that growing up, like, wow. Like, you know, I saw myself going home practicing and really, like, sitting down and really getting into the music, and this guy tells me he's learning it right now on the way, so it's crazy. But yeah, once you start to practice more and more, and the more I grew and the more I practiced, it gets like that with me where I can just listen to something and already know it verbatim in your head. So, you know, that's real cool. But what advice would you give as far as gelling, you know, being in a band situation, and, you know, as far as just getting into the situation, like you said, listen to records and play it verbatim. But when you actually get into a band situation, you know, you have different styles, you have different musicians, and, you know, if you listen to a record, they're playing it one way, but when you get into an actual situation, you know, everybody's style is different. So how do you adjust, you know, and know when and where? Like, when does that come into play?
And that's, like I said, that's the trick as well, because when where people limit themselves is, you know, and I just had a situation like that last night at this church where it's a bass player who plays his style. He'll listen to the song, but he plays it his way, and it's like you limit yourself when you play it just your way. You know what I'm saying? Like, and opposed to people that grow the most are the people, like I said, who take the song, and if it's Latin, you play it Latin. You learn it verbatim in the Latin style that's being played in. If it's jazzy, you learn it verbatim in the jazzy style that it's played in. Or, you know, gospel, you play it straight church. You don't turn church into, you know, jazz, you know, 2008. You play it church because that expands you. That expands your musicianship. And again, like if it's, and again, if it's piano, if it's organ, if it's bass, learn, focus in on the piano. I mean, again, you might need to take one song a month. You know, focus in on the piano, your favorite, where you feel like this song, oh my God, everything about it is structured well. You take that piano part, you focus on nothing but the piano, and you learn them piano chops verbatim, his feel, how he, you know what I'm saying? And this is somebody, again, that's not busy, somebody who's playing the song, you learn his feel verbatim. You have his feel, you then tune into the organist. You learn the organist's feel verbatim. Even as a keyboard player, you can listen to the bass player, learn them bass licks verbatim, because they help your playing as well. It helps your timing. It helps your growth of your, you know what I'm saying, as far as you knowing what to play, when to play. Because once you know what that bass player is going to play, you'll find times where you're just on spot. You guys are going the same way because you know how to, you're learning slightly how to think like a bass player. It's like general education in college. You're learning everybody's part. And so you kind of have a feel of everything. And so you develop and grow as a musician, and now you're able to be MDs and, you know, able to be like, yo, the bass note, that's not correct. Because now you hear it now because you've learned to pay attention to the bass note. So you hear bass, and it's like, okay, that's supposed to be G, C, F, or, you know. So it's about learning that stuff verbatim and play it the style that it is. Do not alter it until you are able to do that. Once you got the song verbatim and you want to flip it from that point, but always be able to go back to the original.
Okay. Now, you said listen to all parts and learn all parts. Now, you know, if I'm a piano player, do I actually just sit down and put my keyboard on a bass sound and learn that bass sound? I mean, play along with the bass? Like what would you say?
I mean, you can now probably. I didn't do that because growing up, you know, it wasn't keyboards like that that we had in the home, so I just learned it and just playing the bass notes on the piano. But I was just playing the same way he played his lick, the same notes, you know, the move. I would learn it on the piano. So it doesn't matter if you're playing it on the piano or the bass to me, as long as you're learning it and getting it inside your head, I think you'll be okay.
Okay. All right. Now, question. I'm sure a lot of people want to know this. Once you learn, like, all these sweet chords and you have all these alto voicings and so on, you know, you don't hear a lot of these on the records, but, you know, you go to a concert and you hear these musicians just whipping out, you know, flipping stuff, and it sounds good, you know, if they're playing by themselves a lot of times. But once you learn all these chords and voicings, like, how do you learn how to place them? Like, and when to and when not to. That's one thing a lot of musicians don't know. You know, playing in a band is one thing, you know, you said as far as, you know, gelling together, but, you know, say you're playing by yourself and you want to do something sweet, and you know a lot of chords, but you just don't know how to use all of them. Like, how do you develop placement? Like, what kind of advice would you give, you know, say you want to learn all the alternate and all the stupid chords and everything, and once you learn them, you know, how do you know what to do with them?
I'm a little funny about the, you know, the big chords, because, again, like, I know so many of them, but, like, again, like, even at the church, me and Mike rarely use them because it is a placement thing. I really think that people should always learn the song. Once, if you do want to flip it, like, every now and then you'll feel that vibe, but you should never, like, your when you sit on the piano, your mind should never be, I'm about to kill this. Because if you're not trying to be the next Chick Corea and do a solo record, it's not going to really get you a gig. You know what I'm saying? And at this point, you know, unless you're just doing it for a hobby and just want to act around and just play around, that's the whatever. But it's not going to get you. The licks don't get you the gig. They're good to have because they help you as far as your coordination. But, you know, again, if you just want to do them, you have to know the song, not just the song and its pure form, but you also have to know the melody. Because trick chords that are perfectly placed go with the melody. And again, you're playing the top note. The melody you're playing with your top is the top note of your chord. So you know what I'm saying. You know what I'm saying. A lot of times people just think, well, I'll play the bass note, so I'll just play a trick chord that I know go with this bass note. No, but if they sing in their top note is the F sharp and you're playing a G, that's a clash. But if your top note is the F sharp and you're able to fit that chord in, you know, and it actually goes, then you know. But you have to know the song, because if you don't know the melody and don't know the song, then you can't trick nothing up.
Okay. Now, this is a perfect time for you to play something where you can take anything, play it simple, and then flip it, and then, you know, play all type of sweet chords in it, and, you know, give it your own style. It could be a hymn. It could be anything where someone can hear the simpleness or the simplicity of it and then show how to enhance it with different placements and, you know, just, you know, it could be anything, something that people recognize. It could be a hymn or whatever you think.
Ooh, yeah, That'd be one of them vibe things.
Put,
you know, we always
him on the spot. He's on the spot, ladies and gentlemen.
Let me see. Yeah, like, I'm such a... Because, again, like, when you get to a certain level, it's just like, you just know, again, I just know...
Come on, man.
I just know how to alter a chord. Let me see. I was just doing something the other week. You know, sometimes it just happens, you know. I'll just sit there. Say like I was doing, let me see, something.
Oh, what about, let's say, Never Should Have Made It. It's an easy song. You give like simple chords and then just do different, you know, different
that
stuff.
That one, now, watch this now. Song like that, I would never really alter the chord. Really.
Yeah.
Like, really, because of the pureness of the song,
uh-huh.
The simplicity of the song, you would, and even my man on the record, you know, is one of my friends, Aaron Lindsay, like, you know, he's one of the baddest keyboard players in the world, but it's the reason why he didn't do it there, because it would have took away from the song.
Okay.
And it would have took focus off the singer. Let me see. Something I think people would know. Can you hear it?
Yeah, I can hear it.
Okay. Okay.
You gotta play it straight first, and then.
I mean, that's pretty straight to me.
Nah, not without all the grace notes and stuff. Just play it straight.
You said what?
Just play it like straight, like basically.
Just no.
Yeah,
okay.
Exactly. Uh huh. What's that? Phrase is what I do?
Phrase is what I do, yeah.
Okay.
So I will probably, like that.
So what actually did you do differently as far as
placement? Okay, now watch. Oh, it's really cold in the studio. So say like, again, you pretty much play that first part straight.
And can you kind of explain what you're doing as far as the progression of the song, like the basic chord progression and how you flip it? You
know? Okay. Again, I'm playing the top note, but pretty much the whole time. Like pretty much all about the top note. I'm pretty much playing the major chords, but I'm playing them like kind of stretched out.
As far as the progression, explain what chord progression you're actually doing and what key. So, you know, if someone's listening, they can actually go to their keyboard and get an idea, you know, of different, you know, your approach to this.
Okay, so you have, excuse me, you have E-flat major 7. And then that's the E-flat major over a G bass, which actually would be E flat 2 because of the F I'm adding in my chord, and then A flat
major.
We're
going from the 1 to the 3.
1 to the 3.
In
the
key
E4 right now, in E flat.
Okay.
I'm on the 4, which is A flat, 5 B flat. I'm back to the A flat, but I inverted it, and so it's an A flat chord over a C bass, and then I'm back to the 5, playing the melody. So the change that I did, again, so you go back to the E flat major 7. And then it's A flat major 7 instead of just A flat major. B flat major. Now watch, now instead of me going to this A flat and inverting it to the C bass, this E flat is the top note. And like I said, and then you're doing stuff like this because there's no parts being sung. It's just a melody. So I can actually take that, and then I can actually hit a B flat major 7. So. You know what I'm saying? So you're still hearing that top note. You're still hearing the song being sung, but it's just a different chord.
Okay.
That makes sense. And so, and instead of me going, I live with the B flat major, I'll do a B flat minor 7-9. And just take down a half step.
Okay.
Just following the melody. And then again, a lot of times you're flipping your chords, comes with like circle of fifth. So I'm about to hit a circle of fifth, which is from the A, I'm going to go to the D. And a lot of times that's how you tie music up. So still following the melody. So that would be like a D7, 9, some other stuff. Back to a G minor. So again, so I still got that B flat chord, but instead of me playing that B flat bass, now I got a G bass.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a funny diminished chord to a C major.
Okay. What chord is that diminished chord that you just played? I might need to steal that one myself.
It's I don't know what you call that. This I don't even know what name you're going to get this chord.
What are the notes you're playing? I got a pen and paper right here.
I have
here.
A B bass. So
B
I'm
bass?
Actually, on my left my left hand, I'm going to play a B diminished 7. So B, D, F, A flat.
Uh-huh.
And then I'm going to play another B, an octave up, starting with my right hand.
Mm-hmm.
And then my chord is just going to be D flat minor.
So you got B, D flat, E and A flat?
No, B, D. Oh, you're talking about the right hand?
Yeah.
Yeah, B, D flat, E, A flat.
Okay. So where did you place that again?
So you got, and actually on your right, on your left hand, take out that D. So it's like, you know, the I lift my hands in, playing that top note, in praise.
Oh, what chord is that?
Just a C major 7.
C major 7? And
yeah.
What's your top melody?
The top melody on
is
the
G?
Thing? The G.
Of that C major 7?
Yes, a G.
Okay, guys, so basically what he's saying, when a song like that, he replaced the E flat, which is the one in the song, with the C major 7 or 9 or whatever you might play, but the reason why is because the last note of the chord of that E flat chord, which is your 1, has G. So, you know, a basic E flat triad, B flat, E flat, and G. And, you know, G is the top note, so now nobody's singing a melody. You can actually flip the whole chord and change it and play the C major 7 or 9 or however you voice it, but as long as you have that G up top. And that's what's carrying the melody. So that's basically what he did with that. And I heard you do something real stupid, man. I don't know what it was. What you got to do that again. I don't know what it was.
Like I said, I just play like whatever. So
it was
You said what?
You know what you did, man. Come on.
Where did it come after?
There, you're sure. Huh?
When did I do it?
I can hear like in time.
Oh, you're talking about it again.
It was off the S.
It was.
I hear you. I know. I can call you out on it.
So you got.
Not that. It was like a. It was like off the F. It was not the passing to get to F, but it's when you got to F, you did something to get to B flat.
I don't even remember. Yeah, it just all makes sense to me. So.
All right. Well, play it one more time all the way through so we can actually hear our idea. So this is actually giving you an example on placement as far as how to take something basic. And, you know, there are times where you can enhance songs, but you have to know when to do it.
Exactly.
Because either you're going to take away from the song or you're going to do so much, nobody's going to call you for no gigs.
Exactly. And, again, too, I'm going to do something at the end of it, something that I will probably do. But again, it's when nobody's singing. So you, these are times. What I'm about to play at the end, before I go back to the top.
Yeah.
These are the things sometimes that people misplace. There's certain things, certain chord changes that just can't go in the song as the person is singing. It has to go. You have to find. You know what I'm saying? If you want to be sweet, you can just by all means. But you have to find the gap to put it. So
oh, okay.
Say if you're singing a song. Say like, well, no, I missed it. It was supposed to go right there. So you got, okay, watch. You got it. And then I would do. But you can't play nothing like that while somebody's singing.
What was that?
Just major chords. Again, you know, and like I said, I'll show you. But it's something that you can't play while somebody's singing, you know. That was a perfect gap, you know. Right before the one.
So what chord was that? Because I'm really over here writing it down, still.
this is just suspended. It's like putting two, again, this is another way, like I said, a lot of times you find your chords. I'm putting two suspended chords together. So the first chord is an E-flat suspended, but the inversion is going to be in your left hand is going to be B-flat, E-flat. And then your right hand is going to be A-flat, D-flat, F-sharp. So all suspended. And then from that point, you got that?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Okay, and then from this point, it's like a D, like a, it's like a D major, like so. So you have the, excuse me, you're going to have the F-sharp in your left hand with a B, and then in your right hand, A, D.
Okay. So you said it one more time.
F sharp, B, in your left hand, E, A, D, in your right hand. So we're still doing suspended pretty much, though.
Okay.
So, and again, you know what I'm saying, lots, yeah, so you got from here to here. So from that point, you have an E, A,
mm-hmm.
in your left hand, a D, F sharp, B in your right hand.
Okay, so you said E, A, and then a D, F sharp, B.
D, F sharp, B. And then your last chord that you fall on, it's going to be in your right hand. This is, again, where, like I said, where a lot of times will be played in your right hand, goes to your left hand. So right now, my left hand is going to be a B-flat dominant 7. So, you know, it's like, you know, if you say church, you know, that kind of chord, I'm playing that in my left hand. So that's B-flat, F, and A-flat makes it that dominant 7.
Okay.
And then the trick, again, I can explain that later, but your right hand is going to be B, E, G, so E minor.
B, E, G, uh-huh.
Yeah. So you have, this is, man, just something to get you to this chord right here, but, you know, these are, like, they're nice chords, but they're not, they don't have any tensions in it, so it's just like it kind of just falls its way through. You know, and all I'm about to say about this, that this chord here, just as a side note as far as a trick, a lot of times people don't know that chords work in thirds.
Mm-hmm.
I think me and you went through this before. So, yeah. So like with this B flat, dominant 7, B flat, F, A flat in my left hand, and I'm playing that E minor. in my right hand. Well, I can also go up and I can play a G minor, which is the third minor up. You know what I'm saying? I can still play another minor chord, but a third up. Mm-hmm. So that'd be... You see what I'm saying? So G minor, and so you can just go in thirds. I can also play a D flat minor, which is the third from E minor. But just about it knowing that kind of chord, you got to know where to place it, though.
Okay.
But you know what I'm saying? So stuff like that, you know, you're able to do also things like that. So just I would suggest people, you know, play with the chords and, you know, play something in your – play something in – okay, I got another chord for you. Okay, so say how do we do this? What is that chord? What was that chord? Okay, yeah, that's what it is. Okay, I played that one in a while. So let's say, like, again, with that B flat, dominant 7, so much stuff you can do off this. With that B flat, F, A flat in your left hand, a lot of times the chord we'd use, where it's kind of like a double up, we'd play the B diminished. So it'd be B, D, and just to keep room so the chord won't be too cluttered, we'd skip the F and play the A flat. So you got B flat, F, A flat in your left hand, B, D, A flat in your right hand.
Okay.
You know what I mean? So you got that. But then a way to trick it, again, you either can go up a third, but then lots of music works in thirds, it works in fourth, and it works in fifth. So on this chord, we're going to go up, take that chord. Again, you're just playing with stuff. So I can do this. That sounds regular. So how can I make this a little different? I'm going to try to go up a fourth.
Okay.
So instead of me playing the B, D, A flat, now I'm going to go from a B to an E, which is a fourth up. I'm going to go from a D to a G, which is a fourth up, and I'm going to go from A flat to D flat, which is a fourth up. So now you're going to have your chord sound like this.
Wow. Now, what are the notes? Go note for note one more time in that chord.
My left hand didn't change. It's the B flat, F, A flat. Mm-hmm. And like I said, so we went up a fourth. So instead of us playing the B, D, A flat, an alternate chord, it would be just taking your right hand and moving your chord up a fourth, going up four notes, going up a fourth. So from B to E, that's a fourth. From D to G, that's a fourth. And from A flat to C sharp. So you got E, G, D flat in your right hand. So you know, one time you might want to play the song around and you're... Or you got the, you know, just, I'm at, you know what I'm saying? So, this is, you know what I'm saying, just looking at the keyboard, I mean, like I said, making it, it's like anything else. Playing basketball, it's knowing it. And looking at your fingers, okay, boom, I can go up a third, I can go up a fourth, I can go up a fifth, let's see what it sounds like, and just play it and put them together and see, you know, what happens. That's a lot of times what we do. We'll be in church and we'll stumble over something. You know, I did something in rehearsal the other week. Even my bro was like, yo, play that again. Like, just stumbled over it.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. So you just got to just play with it and, you know, come up with things.
All right, now, I know you personally, since I've known you, you've always had a lot of gigs and, you know, you always keep going. I've never seen you, like, with a 9-to-5 job. What would you say can keep a regular musician working, or how do you, you know, develop that where people are constantly calling you for gigs, you know? What advice would you give to people as far as to continue to have a nice workflow going and keeping it going?
I tell people this all the time, that your gift is 30, maybe 40, but a lot of times it's 30 to 35% of the gig, and the other 70 to 65% is your professionalism. Being on time, being cooperative, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's not a hobby. It's a hobby when you know, when it's something like you do and go bowling and just every now and then want to go. But if you commit to do something, you have to look at it now. This is a job that I'm doing. You might not like the song, but, you know, if you agree to do the song, play the song, and I see a lot of musicians, the ones I, you know, I have friends that never have been fired, and I have friends that stay being fired. And
yeah.
The ones that keep getting fired, they don't want to listen, they don't want to play the song, you know. And like I said, we're musicians, and the ones that like to sing and like to play, we're into the real tricky stuff. But another thing I tell, even when I'm producing and working with vocalists, a lot of them want to sing like a lot of musicians want to play. And my theory with that is we have to understand us as musicians, if we know a language. There's another language that we have been taught, and that's the language of music. And it's just like with anything else, like if I'm speaking Spanish, I can tell you, como te llama, que paso. But when you start having a full-fledged conversation, what happens to a room? You know, you can have a room full of African-Americans who are not bilingual, but 20 of them would know que paso. Once you start having a full-fledged conversation, that room gets emptied out because now I don't understand what you're saying.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? So it's the same way with your music. You have to make sure that you're playing the song the way the song is supposed to be played, playing it in its pure form majority of the time. Again, you can go tricky, but it has to be far and in between. You know what I'm saying? You know, sometimes you want to, you know, show you got a little something, but you don't have to do it the whole song. Give it to them one time. Let them know you are there, but play the song because the director, a lot of times, they don't know all that stuff, and so it throws them off. And
exactly.
So a lot of times what got me keeping the gig is, you know, when they ask for this song, they wanted the song to sound. They wanted to sound like the song. So you play it like the song. You show up on time. You know you're humble. You give them what they want, asking, and I guarantee you they'll never stop calling you. A lot of times, and too, a lot of times it's even off your humbleness and willingness to want to work. Even if you may not be as good and you're still growing, the fact that you want to learn and the fact that you get to see, like, I'm going to practice this, I'm going to learn this, I'm going to learn it, you know, it makes you better and it makes them want to continue to work with you. Like I'm trying to see when I've ever been fired. I've never been fired from a gig. Like every church gig that I've ever had, literally to this day, me being at West Angeles, I still actually have a church. I've been to West Angeles for 5 years, and the church that I was at before I went to West Angeles, if I was to leave West Angeles today, I can have my spot back because I left in good standings. I mean, pretty much every church that I had, because I was playing about for 3 or 4 churches before I left West Angeles, and every church, I'm still in good standings, and I can go back if I left West Angeles. So it's just being right, pretty much.
Definitely. And one thing, you know, that you've taught me as I was coming up with is your reputation will follow you everywhere you go. And, you know, musicians talk, people talk, pastors talk. No matter where you are, you know, your name is going to follow you wherever you go. So if you have a bad habit of showing up late or, you know, even not even showing up, you know, before you even get somewhere, you know, if you even hear of a church gig or anything, you know, people are going to ask around you, what do you think about this guy? And, you know, you might not even get hired, you know, so.
No, I have, you know, like I know some musicians that we feel like can play everybody under a rug.
Exactly.
You know,
yeah,
and
a lot of them, it's crazy.
We have some friends that are amazing, you know, and can't keep a gig to save their life.
Mm-hmm.
If I never produced another record, if I never did an extra gig, literally because of me and my commitment and my faithfulness, you know, I'm not dropping or nothing like that, but I own my own property. I own my own home. I have a studio in my home. And if I wanted to, like I said, stop everything else and just play at West Angeles, my mortgage would still be paid because I've proven myself. I've proven that I can be depended on. So if you really take what you do seriously and show people that you're dedicated, you can live pretty good. Like I said, never had a 9-to-5 in all my life. I wouldn't know what to do if I had one.
The gift will make room for you, like that say.
Yes, it will.
Uh-huh. Definitely. Now, since we're on the subject now, this is a really, really touchy subject on both sides. I'm not sure if I should even ask or talk to you about this, but as far as compensation, a lot of churches say musicians shouldn't get paid, and, you know, there's different sides on that, you know, as far as, and I do understand, you know, a lot of times I do like play for free. I don't always ask for money, but how do you feel about that, you know, considering the fact that for musicians, sometimes it's all we do, and, you know, how do you feel about that?
I'm totally like you. I don't do everything for money. Like, I like helping people. But at the same time, there is a limitation because I am not to all musicians. This, you know, I'm going to tell you the theory I live by. I'm not trying to get over, but I'm not trying to get got at the same time. So I'm going to look out for you, but make sure, you know, I'm going to make sure somebody's looking out for me, because there's so many people who will sit there and try to brainwash young musicians, which is why I try to talk to so many of them. They're making all kind of money, but they're telling you you should be doing it for the glory of God. So you definitely just want to make sure that you're not being taken advantage of. I would suggest that at the same time, you don't try to get paid for everything, because a lot of who I am today and a lot of the places that I've gone, there has been times where I remember it was a musician when I was 16, and, you know, I was just green and wanted to play. This cat, I found out, you know, after the fact, he was making, at this is like in the early 90s, he was making $600-$700 a week just for two easy services. And he would take me and my friend Mandel to McDonald's as a payment and say thank you, but I was just wanting to play. But through that, playing at that church, I met somebody who was there who became like a play sister to me, and she put me on so many different things. But because I had, like I said, I had a good attitude, it wasn't like, you know, I'm being taken advantage of. You know, a lot of times, because you're committed to your gift and yet want to do what you love, you'll meet somebody in turn that can take you further than what they could have ever paid you. Exactly. So I would say don't look for it at all times, but at the same time, don't be hung up on it, because it's again, I have the friends that's done it, and every last one of them still either live at home and they're like 30 or something of that nature, you know what I'm saying? So you definitely have to really balance that out, you know, use your discretion.
And I'm definitely a witness to, you know, to that particular thing, because, you know, I'm a musician. And, you know, I'm probably one of the most underpaid in L.A., or, you know, but I don't really worry about it, because, you know, I like where I'm playing, and, you know, it's not, a lot of times it's not all about the money. And, you know, with me, I love the ministry, and I've been there for a long time and never have actually raised or anything, but then, you know, hear other musicians saying, yeah, that's all you get. What? Man, you should leave that church. And, you know, I feel like just me being faithful and committed, you know, God has opened up many other doors for me. You know, right now I'm working with hearandplay.com. So, you know, God will open up doors for you if you, you know, you stay humble and you stay faithful at the same time. So, yeah, it's not all about the money, but at the same time, you know, you don't want to be taken advantage of. So, you know, it's a really touchy subject. And, you know, right, you know, you never know. You know, there's really no right or wrong answers. It's all about your heart and how you feel, you know, about different things. But,
now, okay, I would say this right quick, too. Now, again, and I saw this growing up, you know, as far as people trying to skip the paying your dues. It's all about what are you in. Like, like I said, I'm to the point right now where, like I said, you know, a lot of things I don't have to do anymore because of how long I've been playing. But when I started 15, 16, and I just loved to play, like, I promise there would be some Sundays where I would probably play 6 or 7 different churches. You know, and
for
when
free.
For free.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
I wasn't getting paid for them, but again, what that did, it's like any other business. You're your business and you sell your business, you know. So by me doing that, that's how I became known. I'm like, who's this young kid playing everywhere, playing for this group? You want me to play? I'll play for you. And so my name became known to a lot of people, and to people start coming up to me, hey, we need a musician, you know. We're paying $350 a week, we're paying $5 a week, we're paying $8 a week, you know. A lot of times,
wow.
you do what you're supposed to do.
It's been a
blessing forever. Yeah. I mean, again, that was from a boy, like I said, who at the age of 15, 16, would just go and go and go, and I would never complain. I would just go and go and go. I never had to ask for, you know, unless they ask. You know, I would always ask, how much do you want? And I think I started getting paid, I think, at the age of 18, and my first gig, I was making $350 a week. 1 year later, because of my commitment, dedication, and, you know, I'm a firm believer in paying tithes and offering, and I think that has a strong part of it, too, but... And me being committed to my gift, you know, a pastor came to me, I'll pay you $5 a week. And then from that, you know, it went, and not that I left for the money or anything like that, because actually, you know, it actually worked out to where, you know, what I was doing before was the early service, and I was able to do both at the same time. So, I don't want to put out there, like, I think you leave for the highest bidder. You don't do that either. You have to make sure that what you're doing is good for you and it's good for the situation. Again, you never leave on bad standings because, like I said, I was playing for 3 or 4 churches when I got to West Angeles, but I didn't leave in bad standings. They understood. I talked to them. I kept them in communications. It wasn't like, hey, today is my last day. Won't see you again. We talked. I let them know my situation, blah, 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 to the point to where now, you know, I can still go back to these different places.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, but even like West Angeles, you know, it was, what do you want? You know, it wasn't, you know, you don't have to go and ask about anything. When you're doing what you're supposed to do, people are going to come up to you, and they're going to give you offers.
Exactly, exactly. And that goes without saying, you know, you know, you give, and your gift will make room for you. You know, God knows your heart, and He opens up doors, you know, according to, you know, what, how much He thinks He can trust you with. And that's one thing I've learned, and I tell everybody, you know, I'm here where I am right now today because, you know, God, and because of my humbleness and because of my, really, your faith and everything, too. So, really, I mean, it's a lot about, you know, your attitude and your perception of a lot of things, because like you said, you got a lot of musicians out here with that attitude of, you know, pay me this, pay me that, and, you know, sure, you know, you should be blessed with, you know, for your talent too as well, but, you know, once you develop the habit of a bad habit of, you know, just being greedy and things like that, that also follows you too. And like you said, we got some of the baddest musicians out here that are not working, you know, or that are not getting any gigs or getting fired. So, you know, it's real important.
And just, you know, FYI, you know, not trying to preach to nobody, but, you know, at the same time, so I tell a lot of people this too, whether musicians or whatever they do, if you got to broadcast your worth, then that means you must not be worth it. You know what I'm saying? It's not really about how good you are. It's about, you know, what you've accomplished. It's about what you've done. It's about how you look and your standards around.
People, you won't have to say anything. People will look at you and be able to tell or no, you know, you don't have to broadcast everything. You know, I know some musicians that, and it really gets on my nerves, like, you know, they'll do a TV show, hey, did you see me on this show? Or, you know, just bragging, you know? Like, you just don't want to be one of those.
Exactly. No, like, you really, for real, you don't, because, again, you become, like, irritating to the people around you, the musicians around you, and so people don't want to call you, because even if you are humble and maybe be a little insecure, it comes off arrogant and nobody wants to deal with you. Just do what you do, play how you play, get better, practice, and try to be the best that you can be, and people will put a price on your head already. Like,
yeah,
okay,
yeah,
we want him and we're going to give him blah, 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 blah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we're reaching the end of this interview, and I don't want to hold you too long. You know, you might have a rehearsal or anything going on in your studio session. So just last words for everybody out there that are listening, encouraging words to all of our students out there that are listening right now.
I would say, you know, classic line, but don't give up. I'm a firm believer, and I'm a witness that when you stay committed to the gift that you have, sometimes it takes a while. Again, it took me some years to get to a point to where I was comfortable to do the things that I do, play the way that I play, but I never gave up. And on top of that, you know, I suggest that you stay around a support system, stay around people who are going to encourage you, going to push you to be better, because there was honestly a point in time in my life where I, you know, didn't want to play anymore, and I was like, I'm through with this, and, you know, I had people around me, especially my dad, because my dad's like, you ain't about to stop playing for the church no matter what you do. But, you know, that, you know, though it may have been that type of push, it still kept me playing, and it kept me playing, and it kept me playing until I finally got over the hump. It's just a hump you get over, because I know it's frustrating sometimes. It's like, I don't understand this. I can't hear this. You will eventually hear it.
Mm-hmm.
It's impossible for you not to. The more you listen to it, the more you're around musicians, the more you go to concerts, the more you buy CDs and learn music, you will hear it. And you'll end up telling yourself, wow, that's all it was. It's just a matter of getting used to it. So just don't quit. You get frustrated. Again, go somewhere. Go somewhere where you know people are playing. Go to a concert and just listen. Listen. Be around the tape recording and just keep going. Do not quit, because it will be beneficial in the long run.
All right. You heard it from the man himself, Nelson Jackson, soon to be Reverend Nelson Jackson. He's preaching to everybody. But, yeah, I would like to thank you, Nelson, for actually being on this call today, man. You've been a blessing. You opened up a lot of insight on a lot of different things. And I just want to thank you for being on the call, taking the time out your busy schedule, you know, to help us out and to talk to a lot of upcoming musicians out there.
And
so
thank you for having me. I really enjoyed myself.
No problem. So thanks again, guys. God bless. Stay encouraged. And remember, if you can hear it, you can play.